This episode is brought to you by Amazon.com. First, go to our website, arthouse43.com, and then click on the Amazon link at the top of the page and shop away like you normally do. It's super easy, it's free, and it has all kind of good vibes associated with it. You can also go to arthouse43.com and click on donate and make a direct contribution. Don't forget to follow us at arthouse43 everywhere, pretty much. And you can also support our hallway gallery when you can find details. Hashtag Arthouse Hallway Gallery somewhere on the interwebs, and you will find out all you need to know. Okay, let's start the show. Babies, hey sugar babies, hey babies, hey sugar babies. The Motor City's burning. Do I have the rights? Do I? I don't know, that's a question. Welcome to Art House Radio. I am your host, Troy Ramos. I've got a special episode for you today. I am talking with the micropsychologist, Sebastian Krinkle. He is an organic activist. He is a microbiologist. He is a micropsychologist. I think he's a performance artist. I think that's what's happening here. But this is his first public appearance ever, I believe. Well, I mean, he's gone to grocery stores. I'm not saying he hasn't been outside. I'm just saying this might be his first media stint, so to speak. He's probably done things in the past, but he's destroyed all the tapes, so you won't be able to see it. So this is going to be his first exploration into the world, certainly of podcasting, but probably in all casting, whether it's broadcasting, podcasting, or whatever casting couch thing he may have been on. Ooh, that was a racy thing to imply. Yes, so we talked a lot. We talked about his fields. We talked about the Earth. We talked about America. You know, every episode has got to be about America. That's what this show is about. It's about America. It's about everybody else. And it's about the relationship between the two. Why? Let me take that back. We're probably very sinocentric. I don't know if sinocentric applies only to a specific region. I heard about it first in reference to China, like Chinese history. There was a period where they were very sinocentric, I guess. I don't know if it differs from other periods, but I'm not sure if that term applies to everywhere, where you think you're the center of the universe and everything rotates or, sort of moves around you, like the sun or something like that, something bright. You're the brightest star in the sky, grandest ship on the sea. I'm starting to sound like a preacher there. Okay, I don't know. I don't remember what episode this is. It doesn't matter. I think it's episode 103. This is a special weekend episode. I'm going to try and see what happens from this. Hopefully we'll get a big following. You've got the whole weekend to get the 4th of July weekend. Let me tell you something. Don't care for 4th of July. I just don't. I'm not a big holiday person. I love Halloween. That's a great one. I do like Thanksgiving and Christmas. I'm not a big fan of the congestion, traffic-wise. Obviously, nobody is, but you can't not be. You can't say, well, I'm not a fan of the congestion and still do it. That's the opposite. You shouldn't be doing that. You can't say, like, well, I hate my job. Got to go to work now. You have to do something about it. It's not easy. I know. But you can set your own dates. You have to make your own holidays. That's why I love birthdays. Those are the best birthdays. Because birthday comes a holiday, it's a personal holiday. That's what I like about it. Anyway, I hope you have a good 4th if that's what you want to do. I don't personally give a shit. I don't care about the holidays. I think they're a scam. I think we deserve more time off than we get. We're not getting it. And I think we're pretty much going to explode at any moment out of stress and financial fear and anxiety in general. But hey, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk to Sebastian Krinkle, micropsychologist, microbiologist, performance artist, ? And who knows what else. Okay, enjoy the conversation and I will see you on the other side. Thank you. Today I'm here with Sebastian Krinkle, microeconomist, gastroeconomist. How do you say that? Gastroeconomist.
Oh, you're trying to say the noun version.
Yeah, gastroeconomist and organic activist.
Thank you for having me. I'm a huge fan of the podcast. It means a lot to me that you allowed me to be on the show today.
Wow, yeah. Hey, thanks for doing it. It's a young podcast, but it's got full of brute strength, that young Herculean.
Well, I followed the old one, the Art House Radio one, and so when I heard you were making a new one, I just, you know, wanted to jump on the new bandwagon before it really started taking off.
This bandwagon is like those party pedal things that you pedal and then people go out and get drunk. That's what this podcast is all about.
A little party wagon.
So what's the deal with micropsychology? What's that all about?
I study the psychology of extremely small animals. I don't know what that means. Just a specific field of study, I guess. I don't know.
Like mice or like fruit flies?
Really small mice. I don't mess with the big. The bigger they are, the more, you know, that's not my area of expertise as much. Smaller, the more, you know, central to my sort of methodology.
So once a typical mouse grows up to, say, like 1 month, you then have to pass the torch to the to the semi.
Then I give it to my boss, and you know he handles the macro psychology.
Macro psychology. Micro psychology is a growing field. That's what I hear.
It can't, you know, once it gets too big, then it just becomes macro psychology, though. So, you know, we try to keep it small, keep it local.
So it's like if there's like a lifespan on the studies itself, like once it grows, or if you can keep it under a certain number of students at each university, then it'll remain micropsychology. But once you get over like, say, 11 or 12 students per class, you have to close it down.
Yeah.
Because it becomes sort of like you said, a macro version. What about gastroeconomy? What's that all about?
Gastroeconomics, you know, my area of research looks at the gastronomic tract of, like, your digestive system and the economics therein, that makes sense.
And the sort of the GDP element of
the biological, like, bodily GDP of your digestive system, I guess you could say in layman's terms. I guess that's how I would describe it for your audience.
Let me write that down. Bodily GDP.
Bodily. I had a paper titled "Bodily GDP" one time. You know, you can probably find it on Google Scholar or somewhere.
So, like, politicians typically will get up and talk about, like, well, we need more jobs, we need to increase this, and this one they're sort of bragging about who has the most gas or the best gas.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of the relationship between your digestive tract and society. So, thinking about society as, you know, what we're consuming, what we're shitting out, drawing comparisons between the two, I guess you could say. Drawing from, you know, sociology and, you know, bodily hard sciences. You know.
So it's like the state of the poop union.
The state of the poop union, yeah.
You gotta have the right poop to run the world. The leader of the country will put on a pair of gloves, snap, and check everybody's gastroeconomic contribution to the economy. Sebastian, we're talking with Sebastian Krinkle, gastroeconomist, micropsychologist, and organic activist.
Organic activist.
Free range, is it organic or free range?
I mean, I use either one. They're pretty interchangeable to me.
So you're like a free range terminologist.
I just get mad at whatever feels right at the time.
That sounds right. And assuming whatever products you sell as an organic activist, you take full advantage monetarily of the people who are trying to better themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the game, I think.
Yeah.
You have like a couple of chickens and you sell them in Whole Foods, you know, they want you to pay $10 per egg in a carton because those chickens were rubbed with feathers and tickled as they went to bed, sleep at night.
Unfortunately, that's what we've come to.
pampered chickens tonight at 5.
What is it in Portlandia? There's a skit about that, and they're...
Yeah.
This chicken's name was Colin, I think.
Yeah, it was Colin, yeah. I used to be so excited for that show to come out, and then, like, after a while, I get tired of their shtick. They're really funny, but it feels like they're constantly got the zingers going, and it's like, ugh, nobody's that quick. The Gilmore Girls, it might be that quick, but not them.
Yeah, I agree. It's weird. Like, it's a funny show. I laugh at it, and then I feel weird about it. I think maybe we talked about this at one point, too, that Portlandia, it's like they're making fun of Portland, but yeah. Instead of it being, like, an actual criticism of it, it just somehow, like, encourages that behavior, and, like, more people move there and do the exact same things, but in an even more ridiculous way.
Yeah.
So it's like, I was originally laughing because, you know, I spent a few months there and, you know, was really annoyed by a lot of the things that they make fun of in that show. So I was like, ha, thankfully somebody like thinks this is ridiculous too. But then it's just like, it gets more and more ridiculous. Like in reality, I mean, like it gets more and more like that. People who love those things that are being made fun of, yeah, just continue to do them. And they're like, huh, yeah, I'm part of the joke.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I think they're definitely making fun of it. But it's almost like people kind of embrace it because they know it's true. And yet they still push for the stereotypes to happen, maybe. Like, there's this one episode. The moment I realized that, I mean, I always knew they made fun of it, but there was one episode where they were in a park picnicking, and there was a ray of sunshine that broke through the cloudiness, and it was in the park, and then the ray of sunshine was moving around the park, and they all picked up their blankets and, like, moved to this ray of sunshine because they were so vitamin D deficient. And to think that there are people, like, sitting around the country going, oh my God, that's so, so true, I gotta move there.
Like, yeah.
like they're training, yeah, for Portland by staying in their closet 5 hours a day just to get no sunlight.
I don't know. I think it's like that with a lot of shows. Like, I think comedy often runs that risk of, like, are you the butt of the joke? Do you realize that you're the butt of the joke? Or are you just thinking that, like, people are in a cute way kind of, like, poking fun at you? Because, like, I've noticed that I feel, like, similar. It's a totally different show. Like, and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, I kind of have a similar feeling, though. Because, like, that's a really, like, crass show. It's a very, like, dudely,
yeah,
bro-y kind of show, too. There's a lot of jokes about, like one of the things about Dennis, a running joke, is that he's, like, pretty rapey. And so there's, like, rape jokes and, like, stuff like that.
Which one is Dennis? He's the tall one with the sister?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay, that's Dennis. Okay.
And so, I don't know. So when it's kind of making fun, like, in one sense, to me, in the same way that I felt about Portlandia, like, thankfully, like, somebody's making fun of this shit because I can't stand it. It's Always Sunny kind of does that about, like, masculine shit that I don't agree with. But, like, at a certain point, I'm like, I look at, like, who's watching that show that I know, and it's a lot of, like, bro-y dudes who do that shit. So I'm like,
yeah,
if they're making fun of this, like,
right,
they're kind of making money off of, like, the dudes who do this shit. And those guys are, like, feeling encouraged or validated by seeing this on TV. So it's not, yeah, really, like, a criticism. It's kind of, like, or the question is, I'm not trying to make an argument one way or the other, but, like, the question that comes up in my mind around comedy then is, like, what is it? How is it actually functioning? Are people, you know, people kind of just, like,
yeah,
make what they want out of it anyway.
I've thought that for a long time, except the question for me was, do Americans understand sarcasm or satire? Because I don't know, like, if you watch Kenny Powers or Team America, South Park, like, I don't know that they're getting that they're making fun of them in a way. Maybe they get it. I mean, maybe they don't care, but I think somebody sees It's Always Sunny, and I think that there's, I think the people who understand that they're making fun of those characters or that lifestyle, I think those people continue down that path, and then the people who don't get that emulate that.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably stays the same, but it certainly may pull people in that direction. I don't know that show, do you get the sense that show makes fun of Philadelphia a little bit?
It doesn't really, they don't really mention it.
No, I think it's like pretty proud of Philly.
Yeah.
Is the sense that I get. Like, so they don't even, so their forms of flattery in the show aren't usually based in comedy. Like, it kind of is, but like, I don't know. It usually seems like they're proud of it. Like, in the ways that they make fun of it, it's like the stereotypes about Philly being, also being crass and yeah. being like rude, and they're like proud of that. So yeah. that's, I guess that's kind of where the show comes from too.
Yeah. That's an interesting element that happens sometimes in shows. Like, that happens a lot in New York, like New York shows all the time. Louis, those two girls on Comedy Central that have a show. What's that called? Like,
what are you saying, that they sit like the crudeness of the big city, or?
Well, I think the cities themselves become characters. So, like in Louis, New York, Seinfeld. Seinfeld, yeah. Louis in Louis or Lucky Louis or whatever. New York's kind of an character, because they talk about the crassness and the apartment living and dealing with neighbors, all that. And I can't remember that name of that comedy with those two girls. It's pretty funny. It's recent. But then Philly and It's Always Sunny, and I guess maybe LA a little bit, like some shows. I can't think of any, like Curb Your Enthusiasm a little bit, pulls LA into it. Detroiters on Comedy Central, I stopped watching. I don't know if it's good or not, but like...
Oh, I never saw that.
Yeah, it was like two kind of like, two guys who were ad execs or something, and I saw a preview once, and they're kind of like, they're two guys who aren't gay, but they do, they buddy up a lot, so you start to wonder, and they're walking down the street, and they're timing each other, they're wearing fast walking outfits, and then they walk by Detroit construction workers, and they stop and walk like more manly. And the Detroit construction workers are like, "Hey, what's up, man? What's popping?" Like, "Nothing, man. What's popping with you?" And then they walk by, and then they go back to their little flamboyant jaunt. So like that, in a way, they're kind of trying to make fun of, not make fun of Detroit, but they're just trying to say that it's a hard city, probably like Philadelphia or New York, like. Those Eastern time zone cities in the north will fucking eat you alive sometimes. So Chicago basically is Eastern time zone. I mean, it's central, but it's basically that same eat you up mentality.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of shows out west that do that too. I don't know.
I've always said this. I feel like the roughest, like in terms of busyness and toughness, maybe unnecessary toughness, the East Coast is like the highest concentration of those people or that character. And then the further you go west, the softer or more chill it gets. That's the way I've always having
lived. Weird how it almost like coincides with like climate too.
It does. Yeah.
Cause even in the Midwest, you find that like Chicago kind of has like a similar edge to it. And that's still like, you know, really rough winters.
Yeah. I think the weather's got to play a little bit of a role.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's a lot of crime in L.A., not in Portland, probably not in Seattle, maybe San Francisco.
Yeah, I mean, every city's going to have that, but in terms of, like, the prevailing sort of, like, I don't know if you want to call it a stereotype, but just prevailing popular sort of, like, perceptions of a city or, the kind of personality a city would have. Like, I think you're right, a lot of times those eastern cities get viewed like that.
Yeah, because I remember the first year I lived in Portland back in 2005, I think. I was there for a year, came back to Michigan, but went through Chicago. And it was like, it hit me hard of like, the cops were blowing whistles and yelling. People were like short-tempered with each other. I was driving a car a couple days later, and there was a Michigan mom in her van, soccer van behind me, like, had her hands up, like, yelling, like, "What are you doing? Learn how to drive." And I'm just like, "I'm just going to the store." Like, so, like, I noticed that difference straight away, and there is a difference, but I don't know how it got that way or if it's just me or what, but I feel like it's probably there.
Yeah, I don't know where that shit comes from, but... Yeah, I noticed it, too, moving back from Portland, but... Yeah, I don't know if it's just a different kind of vibe out there.
And maybe Virginia, too, because I think the South is a little bit slower.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because I noticed, like, Richmond is almost a coastal city. But I distinguish it from even DC in the respects that we're talking about, which is only like an hour and a half north or an hour north of it, and definitely from the rest of the, you know, cities we're talking about, Philly and New York and all that.
Yeah, I think the south.
But again, that's the climate too.
Yeah,
going further south.
I can remember somebody moving down there to the south, and they were telling me that their car broke down or something, and then the tow truck driver came, and my friend was like, yeah, whatever, like, yeah, this is fucking tire, motherfucker, you know, like, just wasn't mad at the driver, just mad at the whatever. And the truck driver said, listen here, fella, I know you northerners like to say what you feel, but that's not how we do it down here. We got a little process, you know, we got niceties, we exchange hellos, how are yous, and then we get into it. And I thought, that's interesting to me, like, because then it plays into the idea that school children say yes sir, yes ma'am down there, which I think is kind of interesting. I like it in a form of respect for your elders, which I think the North, we don't, whether it's Northwest or Northeast and all between, I don't think you really get into that respect thing. We're all about fart jokes, and we'll throw somebody down under the bus for a joke.
Yeah, that is really interesting too. Yeah. Yeah, I thought about that too. I had this one experience in Cambodia where I was teaching, and it was one of my students' birthdays, and we were using class time to do it, so it was kind of like I was like facilitating the space or whatever, but it was like I was just letting them do their thing. They had thrown a big party for him. They're cutting up cake, and so I kind of felt like a fly on the wall in some respects. Like, I was like, yeah, all right, you know, we're just celebrating. I'll let them hang out and whatever, and then they just kind of, once they cut the cake, they just kind of stop and like bring me over a piece of cake because I'm supposed to eat first, because that's like,
oh wow, you know,
respecting
that's super interesting,
elders in the room, like, and like a lot of Native, especially Northern Native American cultures are like that too, whereas like where we grew up, and I think in a lot of Mexican communities, like a lot of times it's kids who eat first, but then like when I'm at Native American events like up in Michigan, like it's kind of the opposite. Like, elders are expected to go through the line first.
That's super interesting. I had a computer professor at Western in Kalamazoo, and I talked with him after class once, and I was like, oh, he's from India. And he was having trouble because nobody could understand him, and people were getting angry. And so I felt bad for him. Like, fuck, I couldn't speak. You know, try learning another language, like Cambodia or India. Like, that's, it's hard. It's not even
like tried, a Western language. Like, it's not like learning Spanish or French.
Yeah, they're,
it's
all like, romantic in a sense.
There's like sounds that I have no idea how to make.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I felt bad for him, but I asked him how he liked it here, and we ended up talking about the living situation, the differences, and he's like, you know, like, in, it's weird for me because I'm not used to being away from my family, because in India, this is what he said, and I don't know if this is true, but he's like, we don't try to get away from our homes. Like, you guys want to move out at 18, 20. It's like, we don't do that. We stay together. Or maybe we leave for a bit, but we come back because we take care of our elders. Like, they raised us, so we help them die. And then the people that we raise help us die. And he's like, but you guys don't operate like that. You guys are like, can't wait to get away from each other. I'm like, wow, that's so true, first of all. And that's super interesting that you don't get away. That's crazy. And they're talking about small spaces here. India's not like, I mean, I'm sure parts of it are super nice, but there's, I think they have a lot of poverty there, so it's not like they're living in 5-bedroom houses, you know? That's my guess.
I mean, I just visited my girlfriend's family in Chicago last weekend, and they're Puerto Rican. And so it's like the parents are like from Puerto Rico, and the kids are like, grew up in Chicago, but... And there's two different houses, like there's two different like nuclear families that, you know, are her aunts and uncles and cousins, and each house is like several generations. It's like, it's Chicago, so it's super compact, but it's like, so it's like a duplex, but each part of the family lives in like a different part of the duplex. So like the upper apartment is like one family, and then you go down below and it's like her sister and her kids. And then, like, her dad owns a property, and he's living in a house, like, next door to them.
Yeah.
And then their other house is the same thing with, like, the parents, and then, like, the son who still lives there. He's like my age, like in his 30s, and his girlfriend, and they just all live together. Like, it's just, it's, you like know, it's not like a weird thing. Like, that's like, why would they?
Yeah.
Why would they move? Like, it just doesn't really, you know.
It's like a historical museum. You go to one floor, it's like, evening, partner. Like, just like different generations at different times.
Yeah.
Especially if you have a good setup. Like, maybe that's one of the reasons why the house in BC, 263, there's probably, everybody has this little thing in them. They're like, why would we give this up? What are we going to do if that, if, you know, we get rid of that house? Like, then what? Where are we going to convene? What if we need it? You know, I was just using it a couple months ago, and I'm sure I'll use it again. It's great to have that there. Like, it's not a bad place. You could do a lot worse. So to, like, even in Chicago, if they've got that good setup, like, why would you just give that up? So you want to go somewhere else in the city and pay, like, $1,500 a month? Just stay there. It's probably cheaper rent to split it, like, five ways. Can you imagine splitting rent five ways?
Yeah, and, like, you're obviously giving up some space, but, like, yeah, it's so much easier to live, though. Yeah. It's not really that big of a deal. Like, you get used to it. Like, everybody wants some space, but, like, if that's what you're used to, is just, like, having people around, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because we were kind of cramped in our house growing up a little bit, but that was just, it's not like we were in an apartment. We were in a fucking house. And it felt small sometimes because of the winters, because, like, you're confined to the house, so we don't get to take advantage of our yard very often during the winter, except for when we're out there playing in the snow. But, like, so it's funny how the space, like, kind of dictates, like, personality then, too, because that's where my girlfriend, like, grew up. Like, she's very used to being around people all the time and, like, always wants to be around people. Whereas, like, I'm used to having space, and I'm just like, you know, I don't need to be around much people.
Yeah, screw them. Yeah, I guess whatever you get used to. Like, that'd be hard to, once you get used to having your own living room, your own whatever.
Mrs. Like, Crinkle, I should say.
Mrs. Crinkle, yeah. Sebastian, and your son Chris Crinkle.
Chris Crinkle.
Or your great-grandfather, Chris Crinkle, who started the entire Weihnachten Christmas time. Good old Chris Crinkle. It's interesting, though, the thing about elders, because this probably doesn't have anything to do with, but it makes me think of wolf packs. Like, the, I guess in wolf packs, when they travel together, like if it's 15 of them or whatever, the oldest and the most disabled wolves are at the front of the pack. That way the pace is dictated at a, you know, if there's a pace that everybody can go. Because if they're at the back of the pack, they'd just be left behind by the youngins. Yeah. So the old people and the hurt ones dictate the pace so that everybody can keep up.
Oh, wow.
Which I thought was, that. That's pretty interesting.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Just really smart.
It's very smart. It keeps your pack together and, like, ensures that everybody's huddled together. There's nobody left behind. That's, George Bush should take a, that's a No Child Left Behind right there. That's, he had it all wrong. Maybe he learned that in the wolves watching National Geographic one day. He's like, I'm going to apply this to our school system. Like, it doesn't really work that way. But yeah, that's something.
Yeah, we pretty much just, like, totally disregard you once you're no longer able to, like, contribute to the machine.
Yeah, I feel terrible for old people in today's world because, like, I'll see them at supermarkets. I didn't see it in Portland or in England as much, but here sometimes people still write checks, or if they're paying with exact change, you know, they get into their little purse, an old lady or she's whatever. People were lined up behind, like, what's the problem up there? And she's like, are they talking to me? Like, you know, I feel bad for them. I almost want to, like, if I'm right behind them and they usually will say, like, I'm sorry, it's taking so long. I'm like, hey, take your time. I've got nowhere to go, even if I'm late. Like, hey, don't worry about it. Who cares? We move too fast in this world.
Yeah, and, like, what are you supposed to do, too? Like, if your profession is, like, manual labor, like, you better have, like, a good, like, pension or a pension, like, because, like, what do you do? Like, what do you do then, you know?
I don't know. I don't think that exists anymore. Like it's going to be working at Walmart as a greeter once you've exhausted every other avenue. Or Meijer. Everybody copies it now. Meijer does it. Fred Meijer, I think, in Portland does it. I think. I'm not sure. Maybe not.
Which I think is probably good. I mean, I think that industry took a hit just for like cashiers because of the technology piece. Yeah. So at least they came up with a little job that, you know,
yeah,
people could do that machines will probably just get replaced by a robot. Like, how are you when you walk in?
Like a Google Home, but for like, saw an ad for that on TV the other day. It's this little circular, looks like a silo. It's just small, fits on the table, and like you can say anything you want to it. It'll give you the information off the internet, like, you know, how many inches are in a yard or whatever, or like what's the weather today, or what was, give me some NBA scores here, and it'll tell you, like, you know, like pretty soon it's gonna.
God, they got us fucking trapped in this shit.
They got trapped.
There's it's like way. Constantly a trap too, because like my first reaction is like, fuck that, that's scary, but like it's also appealing because it's like we're already addicted to it, so like, yeah, I guess I'd rather be doing that than sticking my face in a fucking screen every 2 seconds.
Yeah,
so like,
that's true.
But it's the trap, though, because then it becomes, the easier it gets for you to do that, the more engrossed in it you are. So you're just constantly asking this fucking robot questions instead of just like,
right,
I don't need to know the answer to that.
Right.
Who cares how many episodes there were of Malcolm in the Middle? It was a great show, but I don't actually need to know that information right now. You know, like, so it's just a constant trap. Like, well, it would be easier, but yeah, that's what makes it like more all encompassing is like the convenience.
Or like if you're laying on your couch just doing nothing, and then Google Home senses your body heat that knows that you're close and you're not moving, and it'll say like, "Hey, are you awake?" I'm like, yeah. Like, they just put Malcolm in the Middle on Netflix. Do you want me to turn it on for you? Like, sure. Shall I start the popcorn machine? Because like, it'll communicate to all the devices in the house. It'll turn the oven on. It'll be like, you know, if you have kids or something, your kid's about to go into the driveway and you're like, you don't want them to leave. And you're like, Google Home, stop that car. Like, turn it off. Don't let them unlock the door.
Yeah, because that's that new popular, like, tracking device for your kids or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just like, man, like, yeah, it's good to know some information, but, like, what about some trust with your kid? Like, you know, like, I'm fucking watching you, you know, right? I'm going to lock you in your room if you lie to me.
Yeah, that's scary stuff. You can't get away from it. But that's the truth about technology is that if I didn't have to look at my phone, if I didn't have to hold a physical device, it would be better if I could just wear a watch and talk to it and have it bring up holograms in front of me so that I wouldn't have to, like, pull up this dumb little device that we're using. It's going to look archaic in 20 years, this phone. Any phone's going to look archaic, I think, in 20 years. It's the same thing with, like, driverless cars. Like, there are driverless cars on the roads right now in, like, 15 states or something like that. And I didn't sign up to be a part of that experiment, but once it's perfected, so to speak, it's probably going to be a good thing. I was listening to a TED Talk, and I don't remember who it was, but he was saying, like, people said this about the Industrial Revolution when it first came out, like, you know, machines, you know, it's the printing press, like, oh God, here we go. But, like, you know, at one point you had a car that had, you had a horse, and then at some point you had a car, and then it had 60 horses or whatever it is, 60 horsepower. Eventually your life got better because we figured out how to get places faster. So it's like if you have a driverless car, a robot driving down the road doesn't think to itself like, God, I shouldn't have had that spaghetti last night. I feel bloated from the pasta. I wonder if my friend's mad at me still. Gee, I should have majored in economics, not like
it's or
not,
gastroeconomics.
Or gastroeconomics or micropsychology. Like, it's not thinking about that stuff. So its whole purpose in life is to get you from point A to point B without all those human, we'll call them flaws, but you know, they are flaws, but like, there's great things about being human, too, that it doesn't have, that it misses out on. But in terms of just getting you safely from one point to another, it's probably better.
Yeah. See, I'm all for that because, I mean, that serves a very direct and observable and, like, a calculatable, if that's a word, result. Like, like you said, to get people from point A to point B because, like, there's nothing. The car, we're in Detroit right now, the car is maybe one of the worst inventions of all time. I'll always stand by that statement. I say it a lot. Like, it's just unnecessarily murders people constantly, you know? And, like, feeds this whole obsession of, like, getting people places faster, you know? It's just like fucking chaos. So for that purpose, if it makes that process a little bit safer, then yeah, that's fine. But like in terms of making it more convenient to just look up random facts or whatever, like that's just engrossing us more and more socially within, you know, those algorithms and those thought processes that get wrapped up in algorithms.
Yeah, plus you run the risk of, like, I've said this before, but Elon Musk said AI, artificial intelligence, is definitely going to be a good thing, but what happens when you tell it, we want to get rid of spam. Get rid of all the spam. We don't want any more spam on our email or like when we bring up a website or whatever. And then the computer thinks, okay, one solution to get rid of spam is to kill all humans. Because it isn't malicious. It's not thinking like, I want to kill. It's just thinking, well, if I get rid of humans, then I kill cancer or email or spam. So that's what they want me to do. So let's kill all the humans. It doesn't think logically unless you program it to like, that's not an option. And how many times do you have to cover that? Like, what if you don't think of one? Like, oh, I forgot about planes. Don't take down planes, computer.
Yeah.
You know? If it gets to the point where it has that kind of power, at least, which it's probably going to. It might take a while.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think of it. I agree with every part of that, except for, like, I don't think it's necessary to call it AI, because I don't think it's, like, a robot that's just going to, like, go around stabbing people. Like... You know, it's more about, like, think about the ways that, like, technology is, the way that you phrased it, I think, is better than what he said, because, like, you're just talking about, like, flaws in an algorithm that, you know, you didn't foresee when you programmed it or you created that algorithm, so it's going to actually create more havoc. Or think about, you know, fighting wars with, you know, on the ground, as opposed to, you know, flying drones or whatever. You know, that creates that's something similar, because, you know, we're not going to kill as many people, you know, if we go in on the ground, because it's more risky. We're not going to do that as often, but it's easy to just go drop bombs or to fly drones into places.
So. Or to have, they have this thing DARPA's working on where it's like a robot, it's like a soldier case. Like, you wear, like, RoboCop, like, you wear something so that, you know, it's bomb-resistant and all that, like, so then that leads to just having robots on the battlefields, and then it's just, like, we have to sit back and watch robots check us out at the grocery store and fight our wars. So then it becomes, like, I mean, it's power, it's like the Almighty Ring in the Lord of the Rings, like, it's going to be whoever holds that ring, like, they think they're going to do something good with it. Like driverless cars, maybe, or medicine, or fixing people. Like, it'll be great rather than dying of getting a new heart, I guess. But the downside is that they'll have robotic dogs running around biting people in half. That's the downside. You can't have one without the other.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I feel like it's a really deep problem that we're talking about. It's not, where, like, the climate change conversation kind of loses me is when people think that it's, like, easy enough to just talk about changing, like, resources, when I think it's, like, more... I think it's a deeper problem. Because I guarantee you if, you know, when we started using oil for energy, nobody conceived of these problems, right? So if we just, like, transfer that resource to something else, it's going to cause another problem. Like, it's something deeper about society and its relationship to the earth that's wrong. Like, we're not supposed to be going this fast. The earth probably shouldn't have this many people on it. Yeah. Like, it's an ecosystem. Like, you can't, if you introduce, you know, so it's a deeper problem, and like, obviously some stuff needs to change, but, like, you know, we're just gonna keep having to troubleshoot unless we, you know, we gotta make some other changes.
I think you could probably even take it one step further and say that it's transferring it is just gonna, it's not gonna, it's gonna change the symptom, or it's gonna create a new symptom, but it's not getting to the structural problem. I would actually say that if they solved the energy crisis, it's gonna increase consumption by far. Like, if they came out with a car,
well, that's what I'm saying.
If it ran on nothing, if like you had limitless energy, then people are just gonna get, you know, they're gonna use energy like crazy. They're gonna buy more cars. They don't have to pay for the gas. Even if you don't need a car, like anything you solve is just gonna be like people exploding and using it.
Yeah,
more
that's
than
kind
ever.
Of what I mean. Like, yeah, that's a good point. So like if we do. Like, say we magically just flip to, like, some of these alternative forms of energy automatically, and then we're just back to people feeling like, oh, well, you know, resources aren't finite. I guess I can do whatever the fuck I want. Like, yeah. Instead of, like, that's the problem, is that yeah. You think that there's not a reaction to every action that you make.
Right.
Right?
Like, every car you buy, every device you buy, every whatever... You think that you're buying it and using it, but it's using you as well, I think. Mm-hmm. You're merging with it, you're becoming part of it. It's not just something that you use, like a fuck doll that you just pull out of the closet. It's fucking you, too. Like, and it's teaching you that you don't have any boundaries in a way. In some ways, it's good not to have boundaries, but, like, not in every way. So, I mean, if you're just sort of learning, like, if they came out with the most delicious brownies in the world that you like snack wells, but only actual calorie free brownies. Like it didn't affect you. In fact, it was good for you. Like we're just going to sit around eating brownies all day.
Yeah.
Like, and what does that teach you? It doesn't teach you anything. Cause then you're going to eat.
Yeah. Or if it's like they found a way to make food, like not impact your weight, but it still had like all the same nutritional yeah. impacts that it used to.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a bunch of skinny people just start dying of heart attacks, you know?
Yeah. Or if they found a way to make apples taste like nachos, you just take a bite out of it, it tastes like a quesadilla, and you think, these are the best apples ever.
I bought a pineapple the other day, a whole pineapple, and cut it up. I think it was the first time I've ever done that, but holy shit, it was so good.
Yeah, pineapples are great. That's another thing that comes from... probably consumption and transportation. It's like there aren't pineapples growing around here.
Yeah.
I think that would be an unfortunate thing though, because I love avocados.
I'd have to move to California. I think about that all the time because I'm like, yeah, local is good, but yeah. I don't know if I can do without avocados.
I don't
specifically
think I could either. We're used to it. Like with like limes, lemons, where are we going to get like the citrus fruit food? Like,
yeah, there's a lot of stuff, chili peppers.
Yeah.
I can kind of grow, like chili peppers, you could grow some here, but like avocados, I'm pretty sure would not grow here.
No, not unless you had like a hot house, maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure that there's like some rig you could do to do it, but like they would just become extremely rare.
Yeah.
You know, but it is crazy though. Avocados are really cheap. I have a lot of friends from California, like they're fucking dirt cheap out there. And like here, it's like you could pay $2 for an avocado.
Yeah, easily. Yeah, I paid $1.70.
Weirdly, in Detroit, though, in Mexican town, they're pretty cheap. They've been paying like 89 cents an avocado. And they're not even on sale.
That's a good deal because you don't hear... Maybe they've got a special connection then because...
Yeah, or it's like one of those things that's not like a specialty item to them. It's like a more central to their cuisine, so they're not going to charge like $2 for it because people won't pay that.
Yeah, I had a friend in graduate school who was from Chile, and he told me that they would just come around with wheelbarrows full of fruit and produce or whatever, and like it was just avocados were just falling out of there, and like, I just take them. Like, you know, I can't imagine living in that kind of avocado paradise. Like
avocado paradise.
They're great.
I'm sweating bullets over here at the self-checkout trying to steal one of them, thinking I screwed the system. It's like $2, though.
Yeah, I do that, too, where, like, not because I want to, but because sometimes I'll, like, I don't buy organic avocados, but other organic things I'll buy, and I'll punch in that 9 beforehand sometimes once in a while.
Oh, nice. I only get organic stuff and then ring it up as normal. I mean, what are you doing?
They don't know.
I probably stole about $10,000 worth of produce from Meijer.
Well, they're kind of screwing us over by the whole system because it's like, why am I paying more to have less stuff on it? Shouldn't other people be paying for the pesticides? Like, that's not free.
Yeah.
Like, why am I paying more? Why is it specially labeled?
Huh,
like, if you go into,
interesting.
If you go into,
well, probably because they feel they can grow more of it.
Well, maybe. But I mean, I feel like if you go into a grocery store and you say, like, where's the health food section? They'll take you to a small section within the store and it's like, what the fuck is the rest of it? Like,
it
doesn't make any sense. How did the stuff that was...
But, I mean, that's a good point. Like, probably 80% of the shit in a given grocery store is literal shit.
Yeah. I think Whole Foods in Midtown is probably, that one's an experiment where they make it affordable. So if you're listening to this and you have a Whole Foods and you're in Portland or San Francisco, you're getting really taken to the, raked over the coals, if that's the right saying. But in Detroit, they kind of make the prices adjust to the community a little bit. So it's not, it's actually, there's some really good deals there. And there's not, outside of that, like the common regional grocery store doesn't usually have that much organic stuff. Not usually.
I don't even really, I mean, the other thing is, like, it's a label, and I'm sure that they're, actually, I don't know, is there, like, a certain standard, like, legally that you have to meet in order to be able to put the organic label on your thing in the U.S.?
Oh, yeah, it's expensive, too. That's what I
what it, to be able to put it on?
To put USDA organic, like, certified organic. It's a huge, so it makes me wonder if what stuff might actually be organic, but they can't afford to say it, which is ridiculous, because you,
yeah, I don't know. But I also just, like, I still don't know how much I trust it, because what are, I mean, I guess I just should probably do the research and look at what the standards are, because, like,
yeah,
I mean, the FDA passes shit all the time that's not good.
Yeah, that, like, Monsanto doesn't have to put anything, like, grown with pesticides anywhere on their stuff, so it's like, why should I have to label it's organic? If I grow tomatoes in my backyard and I only use water, sunlight, why do I have to pay to have a label to say organic? Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, I didn't realize it cost them a bunch of money to be able to say that.
Yeah, I think, I don't know in terms of signage what you have to put, like if it's at a farmer's market or something, like, but if it's like in a store and it has that label certified organic, it's got to go through that process of USDA and it costs money.
I'm like, I'm cool, I'm thankful for the process, but like, it seems counterproductive to like charge money. Like, you're, it's a penalty then to be organic.
Right, yeah. A penalty to grow things the way they've been grown for 150,000 years. Yeah. Like, you now all of a sudden that's the stuff that's like outlawed. Like, yeah. you have to pay a fine to have it, and you pay, and as a result you pay more. Like, on the other side, you pay, it costs you more to grow it and it costs you more to buy it. Yeah, maybe we'll figure that one out too with technology. I have no idea. Like, people will be able to, like, 3D print tomatoes. I have no idea.
I mean, they're 3D printing food already. But the issue with that is that it's not like there isn't enough food in the world. We have enough food. We have the ability and the resources to grow enough food.
And
it's
space.
It's a problem of, like, distribution and access and, like, so, I mean, 3D printing food, like, and a grand sense isn't really going to help solve that problem, I don't think. Because we already have enough food. We don't, like, need new ways. Earth is pretty good at growing food. I don't know.
Yeah, and we have plenty of space, too, so I don't really, I mean, I don't, that's one thing I don't understand is, like, you live in a city, you pay a ton of money to live in tight spaces because everybody loves San Francisco and they love L.A. and New York and Chicago, and but God, if you've ever driven or taken a train across the country, there's fucking vast empty spots like that stretch on for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles. It's like, why don't we use that? South Dakota, North Dakota, I mean, those are rougher climates, like Arizona, like nothing grows there, I don't think, but like California is the same kind of way. It's just dry, brown land. And then every once in a while you see a bright green patch where they're, like, watering it constantly to grow, like, California.
But, yeah, I mean, I think we're producing enough food, probably. Like, think about all the food at restaurants, you know, that gets wasted.
Oh, my God.
It's just crazy.
The water, too.
The water that gets used, yeah.
We've both worked in restaurants. I think Michigan abuses the water that they are lucky enough to have. It's like they're like Chevy Chase and Three Amigos in the desert when he's the other two are like dying of thirst and he's like swishing in his mouth and spitting it out and like wiping his face down and stuff. That's Michigan, because we have so much fresh water. We just at all the restaurants I've worked at, I'll go in the back and the chefs will just be like, they'll have like a huge salmon in the sink and it'll just be like water pouring out over on top of it to thaw it like for like 30 minutes.
Yeah,
it's like how could you, you know, that's crazy. Like, some people, if somebody in like Somalia saw that or something, or someplace, Egypt or wherever.
I feel guilty when I'm in the shower for like 30 seconds too long. That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't, I wonder what people in Arizona think about that, because they have like water, I don't know about, not rules, but like you can't just water your lawn in Arizona, I think. Like, I think there are times where you can do it between 4 and 7, or like you can only do it on Tuesdays because they've got shortage. They have to truck water in.
Which is probably how it should be.
It's probably, yeah. But they just, I think they just don't have much to begin with. We just happen to be in a geographical location that's just like we're swimming in fresh water here. And people are going to come for it. Make no mistake about it. If they haven't already, they're just going to sneak in under, like that guy from Nestle, who's a CEO here and thinks that water is a privilege. Like, let's go back to Switzerland. I think that's where he's from. Like, this is not your water. So they'd like try and bottle the water here and then sell it somewhere else.
Yeah, sell like, it. They sell it back to us. Back to I'm pretty us. Sure.
Yeah.
Like probably. Our fucking water. We
yeah.
live here.
Yeah. That's ridiculous. But like this is, the Great Lakes I think are like almost 30% of the world's fresh water.
What an
water.
Evil genius scheme though.
Yeah.
It's an American story if I ever heard one.
Yeah.
We'll go in and take their resources and then sell it back to them.
Right.
Like, yeah. Talking about maximizing your profits. Shit.
Yeah. I mean, that's almost like the oil game or like the
yeah, no,
the,
yeah,
the exactly. resource game. Like, you know, we all need lithium for our phones, and I'm recording this on a phone. We all need lithium for the batteries or whatever. And like, if they find that in the Congo, they just go in and fucking take it. And if you get in the way, like they'll burn your village or whatever. At least that's I'm basing that on some art pieces that I know. Like, what was that guy's name? He had a really big Portland show. Richard Moss, I think it was. Huge thing about that. Like, the UN will just back it, like, because they're all bought and paid for, all those institutions. Like, you better hope you don't find iron ore or oil in your backyard. It's probably a curse more than it is a good thing. Like, you get lots of money. Like, how many Saudi Arabian families have benefited from oil? But, like, you're also going to get just sucked dry. But
yeah, if you don't want to sell it, then...
If you don't want to... Yeah.
And yeah. You're going to have some problems.
You're going to have some real problems. They'll fabricate what they need to fabricate to go in and get it. That's why they... I mean, that's what they did in Iraq, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, they really... Didn't matter why they went in there.
Yeah, I like how that shit just fades from people's memories, too. Like...
Yeah.
Like, people don't remember that they lied... Remember when there used to be like conversations leading up to like invasions and stuff, and like
yeah,
and there was like all this news coverage like, all right, we're invading Iraq now, we're bringing it to you live. Like, now it's just like yeah, oh, by the way, we started a war yesterday.
Yeah.
It's over. We killed everybody.
This missile launch is brought to you by Pepsi, the choice of a new generation.
Yeah, like it's a fucking sporting event.
Yeah, that's the biggest. I think that's one of the biggest things about that one that still bugs me is we're talking about 15 years later and they never found any weapons of mass destruction. You can go back and find clips on YouTube of them saying they have them. They know we know they have them. They're here. They're
there. Yeah, I remember seeing pictures of Rumsfeld. Like, we're pretty sure they're in this warehouse right here.
Yeah, see this truck, the Colin Powell at the UN. Like, see that truck right there? We know that's they're carrying. They know we're coming in, so they're moving all the WMDs out. Didn't find jack shit.
But the fact that little hearing, or I don't even remember what they called it, happened is amazing. Like, yeah. That hasn't happened since, and we've, like, yeah. You know, been bombing people and doing whatever.
It's like, it's almost like inventing a serum, like a antidote made of, like, orange juice and cranberry juice, and then stockpiling it here in Detroit, say, and then going around and convincing every institution and body that there's a new frog that will kill you if you even look at it. It'll just kill you with its eyes. And they only, if you don't do this antidote in 30 seconds, then you die. And we've got all the, you know what I mean? It's just like, yeah. it's just a perception hustle is all it was. And everybody was like, oh my God, I'm afraid of him. Like, he's just a poor guy. I mean, he's a bad guy, sure. But I mean, they just wanted the oil.
But that's the trap, argumentatively, that they put you in is like, well, you love Saddam Hussein,
yeah.
You support, you know,
yeah.
Gassing people,
yeah.
You're like, it's like no, but like, I don't believe like you are there to stop that. Like,
right?
People don't understand like how many people died.
Lots of people. We don't even know how many are raptors.
We don't even know. There's reports of like that range.
Seven figures.
Yeah, that range that are up to 1 million, but like hundreds of thousands of people for sure.
Yeah.
Died.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, what? Yeah, but freedom and Saddam was bad. Saddam was killing people though. Like,
yeah.
Hundreds of thousands of people, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know what it's like. Like, imagine if your city that you live in is just, like, fucking ruined. Like, the bombs, like, yeah. knocking over all the buildings.
For generations, they got to deal with that.
Yeah.
Like, still getting drones.
And then, ironically, Detroit deported, like, something like 20 Iraqi citizens last week. Undocumented citizens. Like, Iraqis should have a free pass to come to the U.S. more than anybody.
Yeah,
like,
they should.
We fucking terrorize their country.
Man, I remember one time during that heated debate. That was the last time we ever had like a heated
debate. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Now
yeah.
they just do it and nobody cares.
Yeah, and people might get mad, but there's not like, and tonight we'll be debating like whether we should go to war.
Well, now it seems like more than ever, like everybody doesn't have time to debate because they got to get to their double shift at Long John Silver's. So they like can't, they don't have time. They don't have time. They're going to deal with all the stuff that a manager at Staples has to deal with. They don't need to argue about international politics.
Yeah.
But like it's almost like they just do what they want. Especially I mean they know that they can get away with it. That's basically what it is. Until one of them goes to jail. It's like a mafia movie. Like you think that you can never, you know, get out of this, but then all of a sudden the FBI breaks in and then they all go down. So it's pretty much something like that's going to have to happen because nobody ever stops them from doing anything. Like the Flint water crisis. Who's going to go to jail? Nobody. And if they can poison our water.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're... I don't think anybody... I don't know enough about it, but I wouldn't... It doesn't seem like any state official, like secretly thought, like, I'm going to poison all these people.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, cost-cutting, or maybe they knew something and they didn't tell, or whatever it was. But if I was them, I'd think, like, we can poison their water. They're not even going to do anything. Like, why do we
it's
even...
It's the most essential thing.
Yeah. Most essential thing, number one thing. Like, why would you even try in other cities? Like, people are probably testing it like crazy now, so that you've got some sort of leverage against them. Like, you can go public with it, but... Shit's already done.
But at the very least, it's like you shouldn't be in that position of power anymore. Like,
no.
Going to jail or prison is like, okay, maybe that's a separate conversation, but like...
Right.
Still there.
Yeah. Whether it was like... Okay, if like, take Governor Snyder, like, okay, did he intentionally poison Flint? I highly doubt it.
No.
But if you're incompetent, you should lose your job. It doesn't matter. Like, even if you say, like... Even if you like him, you put your hand on his shoulder and go, like, look, buddy, you tried. You failed. You poisoned
really, him. Really? But you killed lots of people you killed lots in of accident. People.
Yeah. Why don't you take the day off? Did you go out to your little Mackinac Island resort there and just, yeah. like, cry into your $10 cashew milk? You know, because, like, it should be one or the other. Either you committed a crime or you're grossly incompetent. So, like, either way, you got to go.
Yeah.
And that never seems to happen, ever. To either side, like it just keeps going on and on, which is it's part of being in America, I guess. That's what we are. That's what we've become, I think.
Gastroeconomics, everybody.
Gastroeconomics. This is micro superpowerism. What was it? What's a better word for that? Like cronyism? No, micro cronyism. This is crony. Whatever's happening. It's definitely something. Okay, well, that's about an hour. Thanks for coming on, Sebastian Crinkle.
Thanks for having me. Crinkle out. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Arthouse Radio is brought to you by wonderful people like you who go to the website, arthouse43.com, and they can do one of two things. You can click on donate and make a direct contribution, or you can click on the Amazon link at the top before you shop away and then just shop away like you normally do. Artistic projects, podcasts, these things are never free, so any support you could give would be greatly appreciated. All right, you can also follow us at arthouse43 on Instagram and Twitter, and facebook.com/arthouse43. Okay, until next time, friends.